In this great scripture, the Lord Himself is explaining the secret of a successful life. We all wish to be successful in life. But for that, first thing is we should have a concrete, clear idea of what constitutes success and also how to attain to that success. He has shown that at various stages of life, the mind gets pulled in various different directions, but a conscientious person, a person who is bent upon making the life successful in the true sense of the term, keeps the focus intact. What I want to achieve in life, that is clearly like the pole star. Earlier people used to travel, if there was no GPS system those days, so they had a different system, and the pole star wouldn't change the position, so that used to guide people. So always determine everything in accordance with the pole star. So in our life also, our goal, the ideal, should be kept constantly in our mental horizon, awake to that, and that will guide us. So that should determine what we are to do and what we are to avoid. Thus the path to success is paved. And this is very practical something. In fact, the whole focus is on practicality. Avoid impracticable, impractical ideas. Lot of our problems arise, many of our frustrating incidents in life come because we hold some utterly impossible ideas and try to achieve it. But that is not going to work. Therefore, we have to keep in front of us a very practical ideal. And what can be more practical than knowing ourselves? Knowing who am I? And that is the highest ideal too. It is certainly practical because I am about that, I am sure. About other things, I am not sure. So whether I will get that or not is uncertain. But I am. And therefore, this the attempt to find me will succeed surely. As the great commentator Shankara says, that this is a science about the thing that exists. The search for our real self is not a search for a unicorn or somebody searching for the son of a barren woman. Can we find the son of a barren woman? It is not possible because, well, it is contradiction in itself. You cannot find son of a barren woman. Similarly, you cannot find something that doesn't exist. But the search for our real self is something for something that exists. Bhuta vastu vishayatvat. He uses very nice language. Bhuta vastu vishayatvat. This search, this science is about something that is. And therefore, when you work to find out something that is, it culminates in actually finding that thing. If our search is for something that does not exist, then it is an impractical search. So, Lord Krishna told Arjuna that, look, make your life a practical life. Don't look for impossibles. And why it is needed to be told? Because we are habituated to look for impossibles, which are impossible in their very nature. Like to derive happiness from something in the world. We keep on making attempts at that. That let me strive and get happiness from, say, this person or that person, or from any other thing, from this movie or that music or whatever. Let me try to get happiness from there. Now this is a search for something that is basically impossible, something that doesn't exist. Because you are searching for that which is not there at all. There is no happiness kept in any of those things, and therefore our search there for those things will be impossible. It is search for impossible. It appears there. We feel that happiness is there in that person. As soon as I get that person, I will be so happy. It is like trying to catch a reflection. You cannot catch a reflection. You see something in the mirror and want to get it from the mirror. Those attempts are going to be futile. It is your own reflection that is being seen in the mirror. So, but as long as you will keep on trying to take it from the mirror, well, the result will be utter frustration. So, as Sri Krishna tells, so look, the reflection is there, so the thing is in the opposite direction. It is right here. Search here and you will find it. Now, how to proceed to do that? He says that learn to do your duties in life without getting attached, without seeking the fruits, without getting attached to the results of the works. Keep on working as it is your duty. Keep on doing your duty without caring whether there is success or not in that work. Just do it because it is your duty to do it. By practicing this, gradually your mind will become pure, and then you can see your real nature. So this is what is called the yoga of action. The yoga was described as the conversion of theoretical ideas into practical experience. It is like following the directions and reaching the place. Theory is getting the directions from, say, MapQuest or something. But just keep on looking at the direction doesn't make you reach there. You have to actually take up the journey, and then gradually you will proceed to your destination. So, this is called yoga. To take up the matter as a practical discipline. And as one progresses in that, the gradual progress culminates in reaching the destination. And it is possible for everyone. Whosoever gets those directions and starts driving accordingly, and the person is going to reach there. It doesn't depend on what is your religion, whether you are a Buddhist or a Catholic or a Jewish person or a Muslim. It doesn't matter. Just follow those directions and then you get there. So this is told as a science, that just follow this and you get there. The work has the tremendous purifying potential. That is what is used in this. Work purifies the worker. The work, therefore, is to be practiced as yoga. Not looking at the external effect, but to the internal effect. What effect the worker gets out of the work. So that is important. And this has to be done. And now, last class we were discussing how long it is to be done. We want always a graded or a time-bound schedule. That if I do it for 6 months or 1 year like our school courses, 3 years or 4 years and you get your graduation. Is there a 4-year course of yoga after which I will be illumined? There is nothing like that. How long are we to do it? This very question, this very idea shows that we have no patience. And this requires lot of patience. This yoga is not a matter of just quickly accomplishing something. Why? Because we have the long-standing habits. Who knows for how many births we have been doing work in a wrong way. The momentum is there. So that momentum cannot be erased very quickly. Even though you understood that you have been doing things not right, to do them right, you have to train yourself a lot. Once I went to a teacher who used to teach that these Indian drums, playing these Indian drums, and then asked him that, well, I am ready, I want to learn. But how long will it take for me to learn a few rudimentary things? And he asked me that, have you learned it before? Do you know something about it? I said, no, I don't know anything. Then he said, well, then you can do it probably in, say, 6 months. But if you knew something, then it would have taken me to teach you maybe 2 years. Because you will have to spend time in unlearning and all the wrong things that you have learned. So that will take some time. And that will require a lot of energy, unlearning. And then the learning will have to be put into you. So we have so many habits, the wrong way of living. And that keeps us pulling into different directions. So therefore it takes long time depending on all these habits acquired by us. Habit is our life really. We are creatures of habit, as they say, creatures of habit. Habits die hard. They say even if you remove H-A-B-I-T, remove H, a bit remains. Remove A, still bit remains. Remove B, still it remains, you see. So habits die hard, they say. Habits don't go away very quickly. You have to work hard to change them. So don't be impatient about it. How long does it take? See, our tendencies, we have been always working for some results. Some selfish motive has always been in our works. Now to work unselfishly, therefore, doesn't come that easy. Whenever there is some work that presents itself, immediately, unconsciously, the question pops up, what is in it for me? And if there is nothing in it for me, well, difficult. It is easy to say that we should work with just the motive of service, without caring for any selfish gain out of it. Just work, giving, just work for the sake of others. And we feel that it is very easy, very simple. No, friends, it is not that easy. Once it so happened, when I had told that incident in this context some time back, a very educative incident. When I used to be in our monastic training center, one Swami used to teach us Bhagavad Gita. And this topic of Karma Yoga was being discussed. And what had happened was, just a day before, we all had assembled in a hall. There was a big program going on, and lots of people had come, and all the seats got filled up very quickly. We all were seated, the trainees at our training center. I am telling this incident about 25 years back, 26 years back. And we were in the CB, because we came early, we got our seats and were sitting. After a while, this teacher of ours, very senior monk, he entered the hall and looked about. There was no seat to be found. Then he looked at us, thinking that some one of us, because we were just his young students, somebody will get up and give him the seat. But we all looked at each other. We all looked at each other. That because the one who gets up is not likely to get a seat again, will have to stand somewhere away far in the hall. So we looked at each other, and then somebody just then decided that it is he should get up, and then got up and gave him the seat. And that Swami made a little funny remark at that time, "Hey, you want to do such a big unselfish act? You want to give me this seat? See, and think about it again. It's a big sacrifice." So next day, when this talk of Bhagavad Gita, Karma Yoga, doing work unselfishly came up, he said, "Look, I am not criticizing your behavior at all. This is a common general human tendency. I am ready to help others as long as it doesn't affect me." Now, you were not really required to serve somebody whom you do not know. Someone who really, whom you respect, whom you love, who is an old man, cannot stand, you know. And what you were going to be doing, not giving something very big, just for some time you will be standing and watching the program. That much you had to do. But even for that, you hesitated. And he made it very clear that he is not criticizing the behavior. What I want to point out is that in practice, how difficult it is even to achieve a little progress is very difficult. Even to achieve a real tangible progress doesn't come easy. It requires lot of practice. To talk from pulpits or from stage and write books and give, that is very easy. That doesn't require much. But to actually bring about a change in life, that is not that easy. It requires practice for a long, long time. As the great sage Patanjali has maintained in his yoga aphorisms, that it is satudirgha kal, for a long time dedicated relentless practice brings one in a steadfast state. Till then you have to keep on working at it. It appears that okay, for 2 years if I do it, it will be nice, and then I will be a perfected soul. But it is, don't ask for any time limit, just keep on doing it. Let me quote from Swami Vivekananda's this beautiful book, Karma Yoga, where he tells about it, that it is not so easy. It is the most difficult thing in the world. And Swami Vivekananda is saying this, you know, not somebody who is using words carelessly. Swami Vivekananda uses the words very carefully. And specially these are his not just talks, but edited writings. So, therefore, each word in this is very cautiously, very carefully selected and used. So there his Swami Vivekananda says, it is the most difficult thing in this world to work and not care for the result. To help a man and never think that he ought to be grateful. To do some good work and at the same time never look to see whether it brings you name or fame or nothing at all. When we do some good work, help someone, unconsciously that feeling creeps in. See, I have done such good turn to that person. Otherwise, he would have incurred a big loss. Now somebody, he should help me when my turn comes. At least he should be grateful about that to me. That feeling comes and destroys the spiritual value of that act. The material value is there, yes, you help that person, fine. But this expectation that that person also should help me, or even just the feeling that I have helped him, he should be grateful to me, creates a bondage around us. So he says, it is difficult thing. A fool can do heroic deeds when the approbation of society is upon him. But for a man to constantly do good without caring for the approbation of his fellow men is indeed the highest sacrifice man can perform. It is like that. It is when thousands of people are going to just applaud you for that. When on the stage, therefore, you give lot of money so that your name will be announced from the stage, where 10,000 people will know. It will get published in the newspapers. And that is why in the fundraising, such tricks are employed, that from the a big platform, from the podium, it is announced that this person has pledged so many $1,000. What does it mean? If you just tell person to just give and forget, it doesn't appeal. It doesn't draw that much inner desire to give is not that strong. What do I get in return? Will they put some slab of my name? It is somebody had suggested to us that person was going to give some money, and then there were some other conditions too, provided that work is named after him. And we expressed our inability. But now that person, of course, is giving and doing good work. But that good work is not without expectation. The outside result is certainly good. But the spiritual value of that is not much. It is not yoga. So, to be a yogi, one has to gradually erase all this idea of name and fame or expecting something in return of the work. just go on doing. And what will happen? That will purify the mind. That will bring out the inner divinity. Each of us is divine, and that divine is covered. How will that covering go away? By doing work in this fashion. And each of us will be able to see the results too. So, Lord says here, that how long do you have to do it? Yadate moha kalilam buddhir vyatitarishyati tada gantasi nirvedam shrutavyasya shrutasya cha. So, let me read the translation too. When your understanding will get beyond the maze of delusion, then you will have attained the indifference to what is said, what is to be heard and what is heard. So the mind then has become steady. How long this is to be practiced? Till the mind becomes steady. It is like this simple thing. How long do I have to drive? Till you reach the destination. Till then you have to drive. It is not a time-bound thing. Last time I gave example that if you have to reach some place, how long the driving will take depends on so many things. The traffic conditions, the road conditions, condition of the vehicle, and all that will determine how long does it take. It is our Vishwanath and others were coming from New York, and Vishwanath, how long it would normally take? 3 hours, and then that day it, how many hours? And 10 hours or so, because of the traffic jam on that 95, it took them 10 hours. Now, if it is told just drive, it requires 3 hours of driving. And then had they stopped right there in the middle of the road after 3 hours, what would happen? Well, that is not to be done. You have to keep on going till you reach the destination. So, how long this is to be practiced? Till your mind goes beyond all doubts. All these different pulls that kind of tear away your mind in different directions. When all this is stopped, then you know that your mind now has been established in yoga. Tada yogam avapsisi. So otherwise hearing and heard, that is the word used here, that your mind will not be bothered then by what is heard and what may be heard later. It is, this is to be understood a little bit more carefully. Because we have so many desires, we keep on hearing all those words of beautiful desires, desire fulfilling things. That we see on TV, the different ads, read about that in newspapers. This shop has wonderful, nice dresses. Come on, let us go there. The mind becomes suddenly disturbed. Disturbing the mind doesn't take a lot, you know. To keep it calm down is very difficult. That is why meditation takes efforts for long, long time. It is, as soon as one sits in meditation, so many thoughts start making round in the mind. Till then they didn't bother you. Till then you never thought that you had so many disturbing thoughts. But sit for meditation and in a minute, thought will come. Oh, I left that work a little unfinished. I have to go and finish it. Why shall I do it now? Oh, I wanted to call that person. So shall I get up now and call? Oh, Your favorite serial is now running on the TV. You can meditate later, is it not? Why should you meditate now? All those thoughts will keep on making rounds. Why? Because so many desires are being pulled by all these words. But through the practice of yoga, nothing of this will be heard inside. Even if it is heard, it will not be paid attention to. Steadfastly, one will keep in that state of focus on the ideal. So this is the state of calmness. The mind has become calmed down now. So till then, this practice has to be continued relentlessly, without giving up and without slackening also. Keep on doing it. Next verse makes it further clear. Shruti vipratipannate yadasthasyati nishchala samadhau achala buddhi tada yogam avapsyasi. When your understanding, now perplexed by hearing, will rest in samadhi, unwavering and steady, then you shall attain yoga. Rest in samadhi means rest in Lord. And then you have attained yoga. It is not left to your imagination that anybody otherwise can say that I have attained yoga. Is it not, Triveni? Anybody will say, yes, I have attained yoga. Is there an objective test for that? Yes, there is an objective test for that. And what is it? That when your mind is constantly fixed in God, then you have attained that state of yoga. Now, a question may be asked that if my mind is constantly fixed in God, how can I do various other works? Swami, do you know I have to work 50 hours a day? A lady had come the other day and was telling me, Swami, I am a manager at a store, and if my mind becomes fixed in God, then how will I be able to work at the store? You can work in the store, you can do all your works, but the mind still will be fixed in God. Because everything will be seen as the play of God alone. It is like this, that Sri Ramakrishna used to give example of toothache or some such pain, that if you have toothache, then that whatever you are doing, your mind is arrested by that toothache. You may be doing all your works, but still the mind is always thinking about the toothache. Our one Swami, I told you that story, that somebody asked him, can you teach me transcendental meditation? And he said, I don't know much about transcendental, but I can tell you about dental meditation. That when your tooth starts aching, then the mind always goes to the tooth. You may at that time you think that the whole universe is unreal, only the aching tooth is real. It is a dental meditation. So that meditation like that should be about, you are always aware of God. Whatever other things you are doing, you will be doing your duties, but now the awareness is God alone is real. With that awareness, all works will be done. So, the mind will not waver from God. All your works will be done better. And don't think that then my work will be affected in calculation, I may make blunders. No, not a single blunder will take place. You will do everything properly. And your mind will remain in God, and that will make you focus better in your works. And then, if at a time comes in life when that work also will not be necessary for you, God will take care of you. So, the important thing is keeping the mind in truth or God. When that is attained, then all the other chaos in the world, you do not pay attention to it. All the news that we are thirsty always to keep on drinking. Look at the TV, look at the newspaper, go to the internet and collect all the useless information all the time. And it is same really, but then we still keep on every morning, noon, night and what not. Some TV this thing said, I heard it that day, when you have time, we have the news. So it is, whenever you have time, we have the news. Means it is, the news will be always there. We have to keep on wasting our time. So it is, this person is not bothered by that. It is, the mind is not worried about all those things. It is constantly fixed in God alone. So this is the condition of that person. Tada yogam avapsisi. In that state, then you know that you have reached that state of yoga. Now you will not even ask the question that, can I stop now? No, it will automatically stop that practice, because you have now become adept in it. Now whatever you do will be yoga itself. So now that question will not appear at all. Therefore he says that keep on doing that till you become established in it. Now Arjuna has a question to ask. Arjuna is a very, very sincere disciple. Arjuna is really wanting to implement these truths in life. Therefore, he is not satisfied by hearing what God is telling, wants to clarify the things. Here Lord has said that this person becomes established in yoga, becomes focused in truth, and then his mind does not waver any way. Pleasures come, pain come, whatever other things in life come, the mind is established in truth. It is like the immovable big mountain. And the winds blow, and nothing happens to the mountain, and remains steady. So, whatever different winds blow in life, this person's awareness is established in God, does not waver at all. After hearing this, Arjuna asks a very significant question, very beautiful question. Tell me, Krishna, how the life of such a person gets transformed? How that person's day-to-day activities get changed? If this person was behaving in one way before the mind being established in yoga, then what difference takes place in the attitude of that person and the actions of that person? What is the difference in the life? That is what he wants to know. That this person has perfected, okay, understood. But what next? Has his the life of that person changed? How does he walk? How does he talk? Does he not talk at all? And if he talks, what is the difference between his talking and my talking? The question is so beautiful, and this part of Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, these last about 20 verses, 24 verses, they are very important from this point of view, very famous verses. They are called the signs of the one established in Samadhi, the one who is established in truth. What are the signs of that person? We have to see these signs very carefully. In fact, I do not remember any other book where these have been told so graphically, so vividly, and in such a practical way. Arjuna's question is a very pointed question. Sthitaprajnasya ka bhasha samadhisthasya keshava sthitadhikim prabhasheta kimasi taurajetakim. That tell me the signs, the definition of the one who is established in truth. Tell me, the definition means not something abstract, but something concrete that I can see, like how that person, kim asit, how does he sit? We also, all people sit. Does that person sit like us or in a different way? It is sita prajnasya ka bhasha samadhisthasya keshava sthitadhi kim prabhasheta. This sthitadhi, the one who is established in wisdom, how does he talk, or he is always kept mum? Somebody described that was to keep quiet. So it was told like this. It is all locked. Is this person established in samadhi? Is always keeping mum, or does he talk at all? When he talks, does he use some different language? What does he talk? Does he say hello to others or not, like we say? It is, how does he talk? Means I need to distinguish, you know. I have to really distinguish how that person is and how we are, how he is different from us. So his talk, does it express any difference? Our talk and that person's talk, where is the difference? Kimasita, how does he sit? And we also sit. How is his sitting different from our sitting? Does he, instead of our sitting like this, does he sit on his head? Or what? Does he not sit at all? How does he walk? Is it different from, does he walk by his hands or on all four or what? Or where is the difference? What changes take place in life? By what signs can I recognize such a person? Shankara, in commentary on this verse, said that this is to be known because by knowing the signs of such person, now we get an opportunity to become like that person by following those signs. Like somebody wants to become a good baseball player, wants to do that to hit properly, so he sees how the good batters, they hold the bat, how do they stand, how do they, what their movements are, how they build their physique. So all these things they observe. Now why? Because if you want to become like them, you should observe what do they do, how they build their this wonderful game. So you look about that, you try to imitate them. That is how it is, they keep all those pictures around, no? Not just because they are celebrities, but they want to become good batter. So they observe how this person holds the bat and then practice accordingly. So if you want to become a yogi, find out how yogi speaks. Try to speak like him. You have to know first how he speaks. Try to speak like him. How he walks, then you can walk like him. So, therefore, by following the signs exhibited in the life of this person, you also can become like that. And that is the reason that Arjuna asked this question. Another important thing about this question is, he does not ask about any extraordinary behavior of this person. He does not ask how this person gives lectures from the pulpit. No. Because when people are watching you, your behavior is different. You always want to show your good side to people. You never want that people should see you are not that very pleasant side of your personality. You want to hide it. You don't want to express that. So when I am giving talk from pulpit, I will always try to show that people won't see my drawbacks. They will not be able to see my faults. So this doesn't really give a glimpse of my real life. My real life will be seen, as they say, from a keyhole. When the person knows that nobody is watching me, then how that person behaves, that is important. When everybody is watching you, well, you are going to show your best behaviors. Like the children also are told, hey, guests are coming to our home, behave yourself, show your best manners in front of guests, let the guests go and then you are going to, but then at least when guests are there, behave. So it is like that when people are around, you want to show your best behavior. So Arjuna doesn't want to know that. That person's natural actions are. General talking, general behaving with people, general this thing, like the story of that that priest. That priest, other every pulpit, nice lectures about how one should be speaking kind words and all that. But he had some person working in his, he had also a business. So in that business he had some workers and he used to behave very badly with them, used to call them all those names and bad things. So one day he scolded one of his workers with very bad language. And then he remembered, oh, just a little while ago he gave a big sermon on how nice words should be spoken and all that, never use bad language. So his, and that worker also had come to listen to his talk. So now he told that worker, and remember, all this I told you as your boss and not as the priest. And then the worker asks, okay, father understood, but tell me, when the boss, because boss spoke all those nasty words, so when the boss goes to hell, what happens to the priest? So it is like that, you see, that. So our life, actual life is known from how we perform the most ordinary actions. That really is the presentation, or that really is the understanding of one's character. So Arjuna asks just that, and Shri Krishna will tell now the science. One important thing about that is we should remove all those ideas that how such a saintly person will be, will he be able to perform miracles, will he be able to raise somebody from the dead, will that person be able to cure somebody of some chronic malady? No such things are told by Krishna, absolutely not. There is no need that that person will have the miraculous power of curing somebody's disease or raising somebody from the dead. Very simple thing is told, that that person's all actions are like you and I do, except one important difference, and that is they are devoid of any desires. We shall discuss that later in next Friday. Any questions? So we shall conclude. Oh, you have a question? Okay.
You said imitation of yogi.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, imitation doesn't mean just just of the outer actions here. Imitation of the life in general, those signs will be, the signs that will be told, therefore, they are the signs that are visible in their life. And thus, by trying to imitate those signs, you will also get that awareness in your life. What happens is, see, the inner consciousness has an outer expression, which has a correspondence. That inner consciousness expresses in the outer behavior. So, if you now look at the outer behavior, the inner awareness is not perceivable by you, but the outer behavior is perceivable. So now, if you try hold on to this outer behavior with the intention of going in, just by mimicking those, that outer behavior is not going to help you. But holding on to the outer behavior, you can penetrate deeper and reach the awareness of that person. That is what is meant by, you know, that following those signs, you also will imbibe that characteristics of the yogi in your life. Yes? Yeah. Well, you had asked this question in the retreat, is it not? Well, by doing karma yoga, you strengthen your will. In this book, Karma Yoga, right in the first chapter, Swami Vivekananda explains how one's willpower can be strengthened. It is a very beautiful science that when you perform work in a disinterested way, then that work tends to be successful. And the success in the work builds up the willpower. The working is the only way by which one's willpower gets built up. There is no shortcut. But this is a very potent means. For example, if suppose I am scared of jumping in the water to learn swimming. My idea is first let me learn swimming perfectly and then jump into water. Now that is never going to happen. And I am scared that if I jump in the water then maybe I will get drowned. hydrophobia is there, that no, I don't want, I will get drowned. So, but now somehow I am pushed into it. If I force myself to get into it, now as it is general, this thing is that you learn swimming. After a little practice, you start swimming. Now what has happened there, not only that I have learned swimming, but it has strengthened my willpower also. That yes, and I can do this, and I will be able to exercise my will in various ways because of this. This is the only way for increasing our willpower. Yes. Yes. Yes.
And then sometimes I wonder, is that really a good way to do it, or is there a way where you can just try to approach it and maybe I should have tried for 15 minutes instead of the hour?
And that is. No, you can do it for 1 hour also, but that doesn't mean next day if you are not able to do for 1 hour. And doesn't mean day after that also you will not do, thinking that, oh, anyway I am not able to do. No, make yourself do it. I had told that beautiful, very humorous, but very nice story in Swami Vivekananda's life. He was talking to M and said that, what should I do for God realization? And should I take up fasting unto death till I realize God, let me keep fast? And M said, well, God realization is ultimate goal, and anything is actually should be done for that. Whatever one can do, one should do for that. Even you can fast unto death, no problem. And then Swami Vivekananda asks that, yes, if I start fasting unto death, but if I feel hungry, what should I do? The same question that you are asking, you know. I have decided to fast unto death. What should we do, Emily, then, if we decide that fast unto death, but now hunger starts bothering me? M gave a very beautiful reply that, oh, it doesn't matter, then you eat and again start your fast unto death. So that is the way, you know, gradually it will get strengthened. There is no magic thing that today you ask question to Yogatmananda and listening to Yogatmananda's answer, tomorrow your willpower has become great. No, it will build up slowly. Yes, Elizabeth? Patient with yourself. Exactly. And you have to be patient with yourself, but patiently start, patiently keep on doing. Don't expect quick results. When they come, they will come. Like I ask somebody, what time will you be coming? And then she tells usually, Swami, I will be there when I get there. Now that answer doesn't really is of much help. I will be there when I get there. Yes, everybody knows that. But that means don't ask me the time. That is the idea. So one should keep on working relentlessly, patiently, patience and perseverance. And you will see the life becomes very, very beautiful through that. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Visarai Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya मुखपद्माद्विनिसृता एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्रगीतं एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मन्त्रः तस्य नामानि यानि कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।